Welcome to I'm Spiritual, Damn It. I'm your host, Jennifer Weigel, and joining me in studio here at WGN, 435 North Michigan Avenue, the very talented Lisi Goranson. How are you, Lisi?
I'm doing good. I'm a little overwhelmed because, you know, my purpose here is to promote the show Roseanne that I'm on.
Right, which all listeners listening will be familiar with her role as Becky from Roseanne and now being revamped into a new version with a lot of the old family making it. We'll get to that in a minute, but go on.
Yeah, so we premiere on Tuesday, which is very, very exciting.
Mm-hmm. March 27th.
I'm from Evanston, so there's that angle of just being so happy to be in Chicago. Every time I'm here, I just feel, why am I living outside of New York or anywhere else? Because it's just, I just love how I feel, you know, it just feels like home and people are just so cool. And
so
great.
Here's what I think is cool. So you and I both grew up in Evanston, Illinois. We both went to Haven Middle School. We both went to Evanston Township High School. Or no, you were busy during that part, but we were both from Evanston, right? And both went to Piven Theater Workshop, very proudly. And yet we didn't meet until this week.
I know.
Crazy.
That's crazy.
That just blows my mind. Your mom, Miss Goranson, I'm sorry, she will always be Mrs. Goranson, taught English at Evanston Township High School.
Another local celeb.
Another local celeb. And it's just so amazing to me. So walk us through, you know, one of the things I was so drawn to you, Lisi, is that you are an old soul and you talk about being an old soul.
Yeah, that's true.
And so explain, we talk a lot on this program about people following their dream, following their passion, knowing inside, getting their inner knowing that this is the right path versus that's not. And when you auditioned for Roseanne and, you know, found out you got the role, you admit that your mom and dad were like, we don't want this for you. And you said, this was meant to be. I think this is supposed to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I always say this story about, you know, when I got the call that I opened a fortune cookie and it said, you will be graced with the presence of stardom. But even at that point, that was before I got the call back out to LA. But even at that point, I think at that age or often in life, you can't really imagine what's to come. Mm-hmm. You know, it just seems, especially, I mean, I really had a very happy life in Evanston. I have friends and a community. You know, we screened the show last night and two of my friends, one from age two, one from third grade, came.
Right.
And it just, you know, being around them makes me feel like a little giggly girl still.
Right. But you're a very loyal friend, I hear. Reports.
Oh, yeah, you know? Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. It's maybe my biggest priority.
Right.
Is my friendships. But when I found out I got the role, we were all just kind of paralyzed. It was so foreign. And, you know, my parents are, you know, my dad worked for the EPA and my mom was a high school English teacher. And so there was no real model for just being an artist, even though they were appreciators of the arts and their patrons. That's a big leap in having a whole life as an artist. And so, and so it was kind of a gamble, but I did say to my parents, I don't know why this is happening, but maybe I would regret it because it's just so uncanny.
Right. There are a lot of people going for this role, and here you were in seventh grade?
Yeah, I think I was in eighth.
Okay.
In eighth
grade, and this happens. And so for you to follow your true north, which is to be an artist, and do you feel, like for anybody out there that's listening, I think a lot of kids want to get into acting for the ego purpose of it, right? To be famous. And really, what we've talked about a lot with Piven is the connection to the work, the feeling of part of a community, where you're feeling the energy from the audience and the other people on stage with you, and that real true connection that happens with live theater that people who don't do live theater don't really get, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you feel that you got to do that in your career? Or are you still getting to do that really good, deep work?
Absolutely. I mean, it's so interesting how, you know, what you carry with you, you know, that I carry Chicago with me, I carry Evanston with me, I carry Piven with me. And, you know, when I'm, I mean, doing television is pretty chaotic, and it's unlike theater. It's much more, has a lot more moving parts. But, you know, I recently, one of my friends and mentors is Estelle Parsons, who plays my grandmother on Roseanne, and she and I have been really good friends for a long time, and she's like in her 90s.
I was going to say, isn't she like 93 years young or something?
She is. She's 93 years young, but it's a little strange with her because, first of all, she loves to make fun of me a lot, and second of all, she'll say something like, I'm going to give you a play, and she's, of course, she's directing. She just directed a Fornes play. She's basically one of the people running the Actor's Studio still, and I went to see her play that she directed, and she had emailed me, I want to give you this play. And then so I was there and I thought, oh, she's not going to remember or whatever. And she pulls out this play and it's just, and of course it was like this 1960s, 70s copy that she had been, that was worn and vintage and just loved. And it was just so incredible. But she had me come to the Actor's Studio and she's interested in me becoming a member there. And that work is, you know, not something that I've ever really done. But when I went there, it just felt like Piven to me. It felt like the work that I did, the original work, the magical work that I was first introduced to in Evanston. And it's just, I don't know. I think sometimes you think those things in your childhood, those the feeling of magic, the feeling of awe, that's something that's reserved to childhood. And, you know, in terms of this, you know, being at the Actor's Studio and just, I felt that again. And it made me feel like, how can I find magic in life? How can I find a sense of magic in life? And that doesn't mean delusion. That doesn't mean being disassociated. It doesn't mean hocus pocus. It means something that maybe just fills you with a childlike wonder and joy, you know? And
how do you reach for that each day when you're not doing acting work or whatever? Do you have a mindfulness sort of technique that gets you to that magical place?
I think that one thing that I try to remember is just asking the question. You know, I think sometimes when I'm unsure, you know, and a lot of us, and I've been talking about, you know, the character I play on the show, and I've been talking about the characters on Roseanne, who are all frustrated in their positions. Right. And I think, you know, that's something that's universal. But the idea of asking the universe for answers and having a relationship with that and seeing it as something that's kind and a friendly universe, even in a cruel world of, you know, human nature.
Right.
That I really feel that if you ask the question, then things start to shift for you and then things kind of open up or you kind of get directed. I really believe that. And it makes me sad. I feel like when some of my friends are stuck and I want them to find that relationship.
Right. No, and it's true because it took, you know, losing a dad to brain cancer when I was much younger to kind of get me on the spiritual path. And so now I'm obsessed with asking people, how do they, you know, how do they connect to something? What is it that drives them? And I've interviewed many medical doctors who have been trying to bridge that gap between science and spirituality because a lot of them have had near-death experiences themselves. And I always say I'd love to interview people who've died and lived to talk about it because they've been there. I haven't.
Right.
So I
want
a full report. And Dr. Mary Neal was one of the most compelling cases I interviewed a few times. And she wrote the best-selling book To Heaven and Back and Seven Things She Learned in Heaven. And she's an orthopedic surgeon from LA, as scientific as it gets, was kayaking. And have you heard of that book? Have you heard of her at all?
Vaguely.
Okay, so she's dead for 30 minutes, 30, No oxygen.
No way.
Yeah. She's like, I'm a scientist. I know this is insane and I should be a vegetable. I should not be here. And so she was up there in the light and she saw that we were all connected like a beautiful oriental rug, and there's light and there's dark, but we're part of the same tapestry. No matter what, right. We are all. And if, she says, if you ask for signs and then take notice of how often they show up when you ask for them, like you talk about, you know, asking the universe, she says, you call it whatever you want. God, Jesus, Buddha, universe, whatever you want. But if you document how often it happens, it'll happen so often that the law of probabilities in her scientific world wouldn't be able to explain how often it happens. And so I always challenge people to start keeping track of those often coincidences that you would go, that's weird. I was just thinking about them and they showed up. Or,
right.
You know, and that now happens at a rapid, rapid pace. And I think when people get into surrender, right, but they also get into trust. It's not just sitting on your couch and hoping the phone rings. You have to activate some things.
Right.
But well, maturity,
yeah,
all that.
That's a really good point, because I think sometimes being open is being vulnerable too, definitely. And being afraid of the response, it's kind of like I do tarot cards, mm-hmm. and which is a really interesting thing to do. You know, I feel like I've inherited a kind of a witchy intuition. It's funny because one of the writers on the show called me a witch yesterday.
You probably were in the 1600s, but that's another podcast. All right, go on.
Yeah, probably. But
I knew you looked familiar.
Yeah.
I was there too. Okay, go on.
Salem, was it?
Was
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it was you. yeah, but I feel like that having a sense of intuition, of heightened intuition, I think is something that's in your DNA. And I think we all have intuition, and for me, my mother and my grandmother are direct lines to whatever that means.
Mm-hmm.
And so they always, you know, I've kind of recognized that in myself, you know, in relationship to them.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom was doing like I Ching, you know, she's studying Jung and she's very spiritual and she's very into what she calls the woo-woo mm-hmm. of life.
Yep.
But I think doing tarot cards is a really interesting way to kind of flex that muscle
mm-hmm.
because it's a way of dealing with the abstract, it's dealing with symbolism, it's dealing with archetypes. And I think over time, you can have a relationship with it that's very much yours, that I think, you know, this voice, is it right? Am I doing it right? You know, does this make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of goes out the window. It's very meditative. But I also think that there are times where it can get frightening or you go into more of your fear place. But I think that's also an important part of the process, because then you say, this is a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, I'm afraid, but I know that there's still a relationship happening.
Something's got my back.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Now, there has been, I remember seeing Roseanne in a show where she was getting her energy field cleared by somebody. Does she talk openly about her intuition? And is that something that's brought up, you know, behind the scenes with you all as a cast?
Definitely. She definitely does. I don't know how to, I wouldn't know how to describe what exactly, maybe what she would call it, but mm-hmm. she definitely is into mysticism for mm-hmm. sure. And one thing that was really interesting on our set, and part of it is kind of going back to California, which is a very spiritual place. People are very open mm-hmm. to spirituality, and there were times where I kind of found the people on set that were the intuitives and mm-hmm. the people that were more maybe receptive. And you know, in particular, there's one show that's kind of dedicated to the guy that plays my husband
mm-hmm.
on the show, and Glenn Quinn. And so we had like a photo of him backstage, and people on set kind of felt his presence in mm-hmm. a very, very strong way. And we, once we kind of realized it was okay, we started talking about that. And it was really interesting how many of us felt that way and in such a profound way, a moving, beautiful way. And just, I think, you know, you think of your workplace, well, that's not appropriate. You know, this is work and that's something abstract and whatever. But it was actually really, really healing for us to be able to talk like that and to delve into that kind of intuitive feeling part of ourselves together.
And the community you have with this group, you say, is really gelling. I mean, it's lovely to have. Once, you know, time heals everything in a lot of ways, I think, for some things. But you were saying the other night when we were chatting that it's like really lovely to have even down to producers and the crew. You know, does it feel that much like the family's back together?
It really does. It feels, I mean, I guess there was a little bit, you know, it's not like, oh, time hasn't passed, because it has. And there is that kind of melancholy feeling of, you know, why haven't we been in each other's lives the whole time more?
Right,
because this is great. And this connectivity feels so, so great. And also to feel that some of these adults that I worked with when I was a child were loving and nurturing adults who, you know, when I came back to New York from LA, I felt valued. I felt like I was around people who respected and valued me. And that was just, it was, you know, it kind of helps you move into the new place.
So home for you now is West, or is it East, or is it Evanston, or all the above?
I'm right outside of New York, okay. But you know, my heart's in Chicago a lot of the time. It really is. I love it here.
That's good. Cubs, go Cubs.
Indeed. I was at spring training. Talk about spirituality. I was in Mesa last week.
Hey now. So that's the thing too. And this is why I love doing this podcast, because I'm finding people in every career. Like, I met a man who was in construction and he was struck by lightning and now he's a healer, but he still does construction. Like, he still pitches roofs and he still builds shelves, but on the side he does this healing. I mean, I feel like if you sat there at the grocery store and looked around, you would have no idea. Probably 1 in 10 people have some sort of either intuitive something going on or healing gift, or they get some sort of, you know, the woo-woo side is working in their world a little bit. And that's important. I really champion.
What a cool gig you have. I mean,
it really is fun because I'm digging under the rocks. But at the same token, it's causing some controversy. I've had a lot of people in here who say that, like, for example, what's going on politically actually has to happen because the pendulum has to swing so far one way to create community.
You know,
what's happening and with our current president and all that stuff. And so, again, we go back to the tapestry. We're all connected. Trump and Hillary, we're all part of the same tapestry.
Right.
We have to be a community. We have to form community. We have to come together instead of isolate. And that's really hard to talk about sometimes.
When I think language, you know, I was a poetry major in college, and language is such an important thing. You know, it's how we communicate. And I was at the screening last night of Roseanne, a couple episodes, and we had a Q&A afterwards, and this guy said something about Roseanne, the character, being a Trump supporter, and, you know, was that kind of a prominent part of the show, which is a question a lot of people are asking.
Sure.
The answer is no, it's not a prominent part of the show, but just the term Trump supporter, I think, might be true, but if it's used to describe someone, it doesn't describe so much else.
Right.
That could potentially be described about the person. You know, what about questions like why a Trump supporter, or, you know, are you still a Trump supporter, or, you know, what's your favorite color? I mean, whatever, right. Anything else. It's just, I feel like we just kind of don't use language in a way to effectively give people credit, to describe the scope of our humanity.
Right. That is so true. And so many people obviously are Trump supporters because he's in the office. Right? So anybody out there that says, oh, well, I don't know any or whatever. Yes, you do. Right. And that's the thing is that I could probably point to several at my Thanksgiving table who are, but I'm still going to invite them to have conversation at my Thanksgiving table because we're all, you know, we are all connected. Now, if they go out and get a firearm and kill people, they're not welcome at Thanksgiving. But if they felt they needed to do something because they absolutely were disgusted with current conditions, I might sit down with them now and have a different conversation. But at the time, they felt that's exactly what they had to do. And we can't not have conversations about it just because
exactly.
It's different. Yeah.
And also, I feel like, you know, if I find myself stuck on, well, that guy, that Trump supporter or whatever, mm-hmm. that then it's creating so much negativity for myself. Mm-hmm. I'm stuck. Right. I'm stuck on something that's not serving me. Mm-hmm. It's not serving, you know, what I'm calling that relationship,
right,
with life. And it's just, it's almost like having a cold or a flu. It's like you're just kind of caught in it. You want to shake it off.
Right.
You know, and right. just say,
go
like,
through the car wash.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. What are some of the themes that you could tell us about the season that wouldn't be too much of spoiler alerts, or some of your favorite possible themes that you can talk about with this Roseanne season?
Well, one of the primary themes that's still always ever in play with the Connors is that they don't have enough money mm-hmm. and they struggle with getting a job or holding a job.
Mm-hmm.
I think one element that's really exciting and interesting is the fact that Darlene's character has two children. DJ's character has a child.
Mm-hmm.
And so you see Roseanne and Dan.
Yep.
As grandparents. And then you see them watch their children parent.
Right.
Which in a way it's really delightful.
Yeah.
It's delightful for them, you know, all the opinions that they have. And also just when the kids are talking back,
mm-hmm.
you know, when the grandkids are talking back to Darlene and DJ,
right.
it's like the joy that they experience that. It's almost like karma
mm-hmm.
coming back,
right.
you know, and so that's cool. And then, I'm trying to think of other.
Who would you say is your closest cohort, like offset? Who are you closest with out of the cast?
I would say, I've always felt really close to John Goodman,
mm-hmm.
Just on a certain, maybe unsaid level.
Mm-hmm.
But Sarah Gilbert and I are very, very close. And I think it's one of those things. We're on opposite coasts. She produces a show. Mm-hmm. She has three kids.
Yep.
And she has a life. And we've been on opposite coasts. And it was kind of like one of those things. What is our relationship going to be like as people when we see each other? And the answer to that was that we were just so close, so very close, and really felt comfortable turning to each other about our lives, about anything.
Yeah.
And I know it sounds kind of corny, but, you know, there's, you know, having a job and having a paycheck and doing what I love and being in sunny LA and all these aspects of the job, but I would say that our friendship is definitely one of the most important things that has come out of this revival.
That's so excellent. Well, I hope you guys continue to stay in that amazing connected space, because the best part about those kinds of friendships are you can go 6 months, year without seeing each other or talking, but then you just kind of pick up right back where you left off. And so that's really exciting. So do we know if there's going to be more seasons, or is this a wait and see kind of a game as I look over here at our ABC family?
We don't know.
Okay.
We are all, I can tell you this, that we're mm-hmm. all on board
mm-hmm.
and we're all very excited at the prospect of that. We just are kind of, there's, I guess, a time when we'll know that's in the near future. I think, ABC, our parent company,
right?
You know, has to see how we do and see, you know, how the chips fall, so to speak. But I think it's, you know, I love when, you know, people say to me, it's going to be a hit, Lisa. It's going to be a hit. And I'm like, how do you know that?
Right.
I just have a feeling it's going to be a hit. And it's just, I love it. It's right. That's cool, you know, but it's also the side of the show that is really about something that matters, you know, that's reflective and that's about connectivity. It's about catharsis and everything that you love in a drama. It's, you know, Chekhovian that it can flip from drama to comedy and just, you know, with no effort.
Right.
But yeah.
That's excellent. I'm super excited to watch it. And it premieres on March 27th, depending on when you're listening to this podcast. Tune in, but just go on ABC On Demand if you binge watch like I do. Do you have any binge watch kind of things that you, as an actor, really appreciate these days? I always ask people what book is on their nightstand and what show are they binge watching. So what do you got?
Oh my gosh. Well, I'll tell you what I'm reading is Frankenstein, because it's the big anniversary of its publication. I think it's been 200 years.
Wow.
And so one of my friends from college, who is my one of my literary friends, I think having an English mother, an English teacher mother
yeah.
Is like a model that I seek out because I love, you know, discourse and I love Jane Austen and I love, you know, reading and talking about it and whatever. And she decided to do a series of salons about Frankenstein and take different aspects of the book.
Wow. Okay.
And so it's going to be really cool, but it's going to be, I guess, for the whole year, maybe monthly, we're going to do one. And I think I'm going to do one on my favorite topic, which is romanticism. Because, you know, as we know, Mary Shelley was married to Percy Bysshe, the poet. And so that kind of thing gets me really, you know, excited in an extremely nerdy way.
Okay.
But in terms of television, I'm a weird television person. I watch a lot of basketball.
That's great. It's March Madness. That's exciting.
Yeah, that's good. but I'm trying to think, you know, I really like that show Baskets.
Okay. I don't know Baskets. I'll have to look that up.
It's Zach Galifianakis.
Oh, okay.
And Louis Anderson. He Louis plays Anderson. The mother, and he is so, just so good. It's such a good character, and it's so funny and tragic and amazing. But,
well,
I don't know.
That's a good one.
What should I be watching?
Well, I got totally hooked on The Crown. And
oh, I think that Claire Foy woman.
Wow. Love her.
I haven't watched the show, but, and I'm not like a totally vapid person, but she has I love the way she dresses and looks. I think she's so beautiful. And I'm sure there's like a beautiful person in there.
Yeah.
It's like my instinct about her, but
she has totally encapsulated that role. And I'm actually grieving it because now that it's over, the next season, they're casting different people because they're much older. Right. So Claire is not going to get all of the makeup to be the older queen. They're casting someone else. I'm like, really?
Oh, no. Poor Claire. She'll
be fine.
Well. So what is it about the show that you love?
I love that it's just so beautifully written. And I wasn't a big fan of that monarchy. Like, I could take or leave the royals, really. I just was like, I'm going to be a bandwagoner and turn this on. And then I just got completely hooked. The acting was really, really great. And the writing. And I think, too, for somebody such as yourself who loves literature, what they go through with trying to, you know, be schooled, but be educated about how much they need to learn about the world in these roles, but they're kind of torn between modern day and what, you know, their duties are. It's really
very Downton Abbey.
Yeah. Another one that I have yet to dip into. I know. I did The Crown before Downton Abbey. So I know I'm backwards.
Oh my gosh, Downton Abbey. You know, now I realize why I don't watch a lot of TV, because there's no Downton Abbey.
There's nothing better than Downton Abbey.
Because it's so good. Okay. It's just,
I'll have to start.
The characters are just,
All right.
And the costumes.
Right.
Oh, swoon.
That's right. Swoon.
Swoon.
If people want to find you, Lisi, what's the best way for them to follow you? Are you a big social media person?
I'm not. My Facebook is private because it's all for those e-towners in my life that I don't get to see all the time. But I'm at Private Ego on Twitter. Is that bizarre?
That's cool. All right. Are you a good tweeter or are you needing a tutorial?
I am not a good tweeter.
I'm an occasional tweeter. So maybe
I don't really get it. You know how there's some forms of social media that you kind of get and some you don't?
Right.
Twitter, I just don't. But I have people that like get their news from Twitter and they are always on it.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm not connecting with it.
Okay. I'm with you. I like Instagram. I can do Instagram. How about you with Instagram? No?
I've just kind of joined the Instagram wagon or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
But I'm not prolific
on
with it.
Well, it's an easy learning curve. And for an artist such as yourself that I can imagine has a good eye, just to take a glimpse of a moment while walking down Michigan Avenue or what have you, you can have a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's what I do, but I don't do it enough. And it's also kind of weird. I actually went to the Contemporary Art Museum here yesterday.
Oh,
I had like a couple of minutes
wonderful.
To just be here and not talk about Roseanne. But it was just, I just love going there. They do such a good job with their shows. But I Instagrammed something and it was this painting that just was really powerful. And it just kind of said it's homeless in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like it's the homeless problem in our country is it's so grave and it's so tragic that I thought, oh, this kind of caught my eye, something to meditate on and share and whatever. And then, you know, you kind of have that feeling like, is it a bummer that I put that in the universe? You know, it's like, but it's just, I feel like it's something that, which is funny that I would think that, but it's like.
Awareness is important. And that's what you did. Yeah, you weren't trying to vomit negativity. You were just bringing awareness.
Right. And just, I feel like the fact that we just don't, I mean, the problem is that no one seems to really care about it.
Right.
And I know people say, well, people care more about their pets, but it's true. I mean, it's this really extreme problem in our country. And, you know, when I was out in LA, it was funny because I was in New York and the homeless problem's very bad there. And I had a couple friends in from LA and they said, Lisi, it's worse in LA. And I said, no, it can't, you know, it's so bad here. It's so bad. And then I found myself living in LA suddenly for a few months to shoot the show. And it was just, it was devastating.
Because it's warmer, I think it's easier to be a homeless person in LA than it is, you know, Chicago or New York or what have you. At least that's in the stories that I've read. Because you can pitch a tent somewhere and not worry about freezing overnight. But it's just, like you say, it's tragic. It's a terrible thing.
And I wonder, it's like, I wonder why we're not talking about it more. Mm-hmm. Like, I wonder why, I mean, one thing that I've learned in my life is that creativity is not just designated for being an artist.
Right.
You can be creative in every single aspect of your life, how you communicate to your business partner, how you approach something intellectually, you know, how you grocery shop. I mean, there's so many ways that you can have a creative approach.
Right.
And I wonder why. I just wonder why we haven't, how have we not figured this out yet?
Right. We're really smart in a lot of ways. We can figure out how to prop our phones up with a little device that goes like that. And, you know, but we can't solve the homeless problem.
We can figure out how to make an iPhone. We can figure out, you know, to put whatever, some kind of SpaceX, missile or whatever. But it's like we can't figure this out, or are we even trying? I think that's the thing. And I think, oh my gosh, Lisi, there's so many people There's so many, and people really trash religion, mm-hmm. and understandably so. It's done so much damage. But there's so many people who are religious who are also spiritual and who have soup kitchens and reach out and do really loving works for strangers. That's part of that too.
Right.
And so I think there are people out there, but I just feel like it's just not enough.
Well, I love to make a call to action for our listeners. So anybody out there who is listening, I challenge you to do something selfless, to give you haven't given. I asked my sister if she could meet for dinner, and she's actually tutoring some kids at the Off the Street Club tonight. And she says, I'll meet you afterwards. And Off the Street Club is an incredible organization in the West Loop here. You know, my dad was one of these advocates where he went to Yale and he was in New Haven. But after he graduated, he taught the inner city kids, and, you know, he just was a third grade teacher. So he instilled that in us, but not everybody had that. And so if you're listening right now and you're just in your car and your SUV and you're doing your thing, I challenge you to get out of your comfort zone and do a little something. Go over to a store and pay off somebody's layaway, or make a call and go online and volunteer at a soup kitchen with your kid for the weekend. Do a little something, because when you give that momentum, I believe the universe pays you back. It really does. You have to put it out there in order to receive it. You cannot be sitting there and just get all the goods without putting something out there first. So thank you for bringing up that point, because it gives us the chance to put that out to the listeners to go do something awesome. And I appreciate that you brought that to our attention.
That's a really interesting thing, too, because, you know, I kind of see just with this Roseanne revival, it's kind of a way to assess what has been, mm-hmm. and kind of reassess and then think, well, what for now? You know, right. What's the new thing? And when I was a kid, when I was in California, I started getting followed by the paparazzi. Mm-hmm. And that was very scary for me. Mm-hmm. You know, the idea of having my privacy. Everyone says, why'd you leave the show? That's crazy. You were, you know, what happened to you? You were a big star and now you're not, or something. You know, mm-hmm. how charming people can get.
Yeah, of course.
So, but I guess I feel like I was so shut down almost, mm-hmm. when I was a kid, that I didn't want to do press and I just wanted to be private, and I was so kind of closed off. Mm-hmm. And this, you know, I'm here doing this press thing for Roseanne, and mm-hmm. I'm going around the country, and it's, you know, I complain about it sometimes. It's not too bad, but it's a lot of giving. It's mm-hmm. a lot of sharing. It's a lot of sharing. And
a lot of energy is extended in this.
Yeah,
for sure.
It really is. But mm-hmm. then, you know, to your point, there's so much that I've received in just seeing what our show means to others, and to see their joy, to see their just pure, their faces full of joy and enthusiasm. And that's a really wonderful thing to share. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Well, thank you for sharing your story, your energy, ditching your lunch break to be with us. And to all of you out there, keep track of Lisi. And I don't know about following her on Insta. That might get a little more active, but definitely follow her on Roseanne on ABC on Tuesdays. We will hope and cheer for more seasons to come. And for those in the Chicago area, go to the Piven Gala on May 5th, because
two of your favorite gals are going to be hosting.
That's right. I'm so excited to get to share the stage with Lisi for that, because we're both proud Piven alums, and that's just going to be a great way to get some people together for a good cause. So more giving back on the other side of this. But to all of you out there, please treat others the way you'd like to be treated. And you can learn more about me at jenweigel.com. That's JenweigeL.com. Big hugs to Lisi. And
thank
you
so much.
Thank you for everything you put out there. And everybody out there listening, stay spiritual. Damn it.